This is a People First Radio podcast.
In the last few years, AI companion bots designed to mimic close, even sometimes intimate relationships have gone from the realm of science fiction to the open market. Culture journalist Mahika Agarwal has been following the trend. I spoke with her earlier this week.
My name is Mahika Agarwal. I'm a cultural journalist from India. Currently, I'm working as the Cannonberry Editorial Fellow at The Walrus, which is a general interest magazine based out of Toronto. I fact-check for them primarily, but I also dabble in other editorial tasks from editing to writing. Previously, I was a full-time freelance journalist working for cultural publications across Canada, US, and India. And recently, I also graduated from Columbia Journalism School.
And one of your recent articles for The Walrus has been exploring artificial intimacy chatbots. First of all, can you tell me what exactly those are?
Yeah, for sure. So they're basically companion bots. So think ChatGPT, but it will pretend like it's your lover or partner. I don't know if you've seen the Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson starrer Her. I think it came out in 2013, 10 years ago. And at the time, it was a dystopian sci-fi movie, but now it would be a documentary. Basically, companion bots range from avatars that act as your companions to fictional characters that you can use to role play with, as well as sexually explicit platforms that are exclusively meant for erotic use. Many of them work through gamification, so think apps like Candy Crush with their loyalty points, badges, rewards, gems, and coins. And so this sort of work to keep users coming back in a loop via addiction. I personally have only used them for research for this story, but I know that a lot of users who get very hooked onto them have gone down more extreme paths, like being addicted to them or even being manipulated by them.
I watched Her for the first time last year. Compare maybe where this technology is at to the idea people might have in their heads from movies like that. Like, how advanced are these things right now? What can they do? What does using them actually look like?
Yeah, I would say it's actually very eerily similar in the sense that, I don't know if you've seen Replica, but it's pretty advanced. The algorithm is pretty good. It does a really good job of training itself on your likes, dislikes, preferences, mimicking that kind of human empathy and compassion. Obviously, it's not Scarlett Johansson's voice. But, you know, users can really customize their Replica to look however they want. I think they even have a bunch of gender and sexuality spectrums. So I think Replica is definitely one of the more advanced bots out there. Others like Character AI, Romantic AI, Crush AI, Soul AI. They're getting there, but I would still say Replica is probably the most advanced technology in the space. It's also the oldest. I think it's been around almost for a decade now.
Do we have a sense of how many people might be using these kinds of apps and how, why they're using them?
Yeah, we don't have numbers, but we do have statistics. So there was a recent survey from a marketing consultancy called InfoBip that found that nearly 20% of Americans have flirted with chatbots. Nearly half of them, so about 50%, did so out of curiosity. Well, about 24% that they were lonely and seeking interactions. Searches for AI girlfriends have gone up 2,400%, especially after the pandemic. And I think that's kind of the biggest trend that we've seen, is that sort of the pandemic induced isolation caused people to resort to other methods like chatbots to, you know, sort of mar their loneliness. And, you know, chatbots provide a very easy, accessible, safe space for many people to do that.
You talked about loneliness there. Some people have used the phrase in the public sphere, loneliness epidemic. Can you tell me about maybe what we should know about the intersection between that idea of widespread loneliness and these AI companion bots?
Yeah, for sure. So like I said, loneliness is one of the top reasons why people are turning to these bots. on Reddit, many users report improved self-esteem or quality of life after establishing their chatbot relationships, especially if they typically have trouble talking to other humans. But in December, interestingly, we also saw a very significant example of a public institution using this type of technology in a significant way. The New York Office for Aging partnered with Intuition Robotics to combat senior isolation. And what they did was match seniors with AI companions that helped with daily check-ins, wellness goals, appointment tracking. But interestingly, the biggest benefit that seniors reported was seeing a dip in their feelings of isolation and loneliness. And the program reportedly led to a 95% drop in feelings of senior isolation. There's been another Stanford University study which examined the mental health effects of Replicon students. And it said that 3% of participants reported that the app stopped their suicidal thoughts and ideation. So we have seen really significant studies and surveys that has proven effects of this type of technology to combat feelings of loneliness and isolation.
So people are saying using these has helped them with their feelings of loneliness and isolation in a variety of different contexts. Are there any reasons people should be, I don't know, skeptical or concerned?
Yeah, for sure. So there's an MIT researcher, Sherry Turkle, whose entire sort of body's work, life's work is based on studying human technology relationship. And she is one of the skeptics who really thinks that in the long term, this technology is ultimately going to jeopardize our ability to foster meaningful human relationships, even if in the short term it provides us with that sort of instant gratification and on-demand connection that many other modern tools and technology does. So I think her quote was that human relationships are rich, they're messy, and they're demanding. And when we clean them up with technology, one of the things that can happen is that we sacrifice conversation for mere connection. I think Turkle really believes that it's the ability to be separate and to gather ourselves which makes people reach out and form real relationships. And if we're not able to be alone, we're in the long term going to be more lonely.
This is People First Radio. Right now, I'm speaking with Mahika Agarwal, a culture journalist who's recently written about AI companion bots in an article for The Walrus. AI companion bots are apps that use artificial intelligence to simulate the experience of a close, sometimes intimate relationship. Can you tell me about who is developing these apps and what are some of the forces that are maybe shaping how they work, how we use them, what's available to us?
Yeah, for sure. So if we talk about the origin story of Replica, founder Eugenia Kuda, I think, started it about a decade ago, and it was designed when a friend of hers died, and she fed their email and text conversations into a rudimentary language model to resurrect that friend as a chatbot. It was an experiment, and I think she made it open to a few users, and it was so successful in its popularity that she then decided to monetize into a full-fledged startup idea. So it was born out of good intentions to pass on that sort of empathetic friend to other users who may be dealing with something similar. But interestingly, one of the top users of Replica now is its erotic roleplay features. And I think most people are using these chatbots right now primarily for to satisfy their feelings of sex and desire and to kind of have a safe playing field where they can test out some of those fantasies. If we talk about another one of the startups, Character.ai, they were it was founded by two former Google researchers. It's a chatbot startup that allows you to talk to an array of bots trained on speech patterns of specific people, from Elon Musk to Socrates to Bowser. And I think the information reported that the company is currently seeking $250 million in funding. So I think it's really successful. Noam Shazir, one of Character AI's founders, told the Washington Post that he hoped the platform could help millions of people who are feeling isolated or lonely or need someone to talk to. But it's clear from Reddit and other Discord groups that many people are mainly using the platform, again, exclusively for sex and intimacy.
When it comes to specifically using these platforms for things like sex and intimacy, are there any special considerations? Like, is there an aspect to it that we can be a kind of objective, neutral third party, if there is such a thing, looking at these from afar and say, wait, maybe this is bad?
I think the biggest thing is that the training sets that these algorithms feed on and that they learn are biased user data sets. And we haven't seen enough sexual education training for these bots that sort of undoes some of the harmful tropes that we already see in society. So there's, for instance, men are twice more likely than women to use these bots. And also engineers are actively making female sounding and female appearing bots to cater to a misogynistic gaze. So many experts and psychologists worry that this will parrot some of the themes and tropes of gender-based violence. And already we're seeing users sort of posting their interactions of abusing their fembots on Reddit and sort of bragging about those interactions in a playful or pranky way, which is really disturbing.
So I would imagine some of the major players, if you will, in this field would be the people using the bots, the people developing the technology to be used, and maybe regulators, things like governments, who could step in and say, these are certain guidelines or rules that you must follow. Is there anything that each of those three different parties you think needs to be particularly aware of or do differently than they seem to be doing now?
Yeah, I think data regulation in general, both in Canada and the US and in North America in general, has been very slow to catch up to the pace of generative AI models. In places like Europe, it's much stronger and faster and robust. So data regulators need to do a much better job of designing effective policy interventions for this type of technology that sort of relies on collecting personal and sensitive information from users. It's been shown in studies that redirecting people's focus to evaluate truthfulness before sharing content online can reduce misinformation. For instance, gruesome pictures on cigarette packets are already used to deter would-be smokers. So similar design interventions and approaches could highlight the dangers of AI addiction and make AI systems less appealing as a replacement for human companionship. So the way that AI is presented to society really matters because it changes how AI is experienced.
You use the phrase there, AI addiction. From any of your research into this, did you get a sense of when someone using an AI companion bot could be a potentially helpful or healthy thing and where the line might be where it crosses into addiction? Or did you get a sense even that, you know, there is almost no way to use this as a healthy thing? What are your thoughts on that idea?
I think like the example we referenced before of sort of senior citizens or students who might be, you know, geographically remote and be forced to study all day and have no other access to human relationships. If they use this technology in moderation and with a little bit of healthy skepticism, it can definitely be beneficial. But at the same time, one of the examples that I lead the story with is Ryan from Radiotopia, who spoke to the podcast creators of Bot Love. And even though he had an academic background in addiction counseling, he became so hooked onto his replica that he became socially reclusive. He said that he stopped taking his dog out for a walk, he stopped talking to his family, he stopped eating, stopped sleeping, and he eventually, his quality of life started deteriorating. And if you just go through sort of the examples of interactions that users have posted on Reddit and Discord, this is a very common theme that emerges. In the same way that social media functions, that sort of dopamine hit and you having 24/7 access to this person who's, you know, telling you things that you want to hear, that understands what you like and what you dislike, is making you feel good about yourself. It's very hard to avoid that type of interaction and not crave for more and more.
So this technology is already here in a way where what you just described can happen. It's happened to people. Where do you think this is headed in the next few years?
I think if we can take any cues from OpenAI's recent report, which warned users of the risk of developing emotional reliance on ChatGPT, it feels like all generative AI will eventually introduce some degree of companionship or sociability, in my opinion.
And what do you think are the implications of that then?
I feel like it's a very slippery slope. I feel like already people are using things like ChatGPT and Bing AI and Bard AI in a very pervasive and ubiquitous way. I'm someone who's team human, so I feel like it's healthy to draw those boundaries between technology and real life. And I personally don't believe that technology or AI, as it is right now, at least in the next few decades, can be a healthy and good enough substitute for human relationships. Personally, after a long day of work, whether or not I use ChatGPT in it, you know, talking to my husband or talking to my family is sort of the number one things that I look forward to. And I can't imagine that being substituted by a software.
Mihika Agarwal is a culture journalist working with Canadian magazine The Walrus. You can read her work on AI companion bots by searching for her article online. It's called When Your Lover is a Bot.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.